Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
TGIF, thank God it's Friday. And if it's Friday, it's Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio and Kinetic Hi-Fi at Charleston, New York. I'm your hostess with the most, the radio chick, Annie. And unfortunately, my co-host once again is not with me. He is doing his civic duty and fighting to have an issue placed on his back this May. So he didn't quit doing what he can to get a tax proposal before the people so that they have a choice to vote up or down. And who wants to pay taxes? Not me. So Kulmik is out there fighting the fight for the rest. So hopefully, maybe he can finish a little bit later on. If not, he better be back with us next week, or otherwise I'm going up Michigan and kicking his butt. Anyway, I want to welcome everyone that's in the chat room and those that are listening in online and on the phone listening in, and we're going to have a great, great show. We've got a lot of stuff going on, and our guest today is going to be Mikhail Kladnysen. He wrote the book Manipulism and the Weapon of Guilt, Collectivism Exposed. So many isms in there. But we're going to have a great time with Mikhail. He's coming back once again because he's completed the book, and we're ready to rock and roll with it and get some people out there to buy it. Anyone that listens to the show also knows that we take a serious side. We always do a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's show is going to be dedicated to Chief Warrant Officer Edward Bally, who was killed January 20th of 2014, this year, by small arms fire from insurgents in Afghanistan. And since I don't have a co-host, bear with me as I do all of this on my own. This is from the Monterey Herald. A soldier born and raised in Salinas, with dreams of retirement in Hawaii in 4 years, was killed in Afghanistan on January 20th, his family said. Chief Warrant Officer Edward Bally, called Eddie by his family and friends, was killed when his outpost was attacked by insurgents and received a fatal wound, his uncle Tony Veruta said. He is believed to be the 14th soldier from Monterey County killed since the start of the Afghan War. Mr. Bally is survived by his wife, Christy, in Hawaii, and brother and mother and two sisters who all live in and near the county. He raised three adopted children in a previous marriage. Mr. Bally spent his formative years in Salinas, attending North Salinas High School. In 1991, right after graduation, he joined the Army, his uncle said. He was promoted to staff sergeant, transferred to officer status, eventually reached a corporal officership. The drum pilot in Afghanistan received the Bronze Star, his uncle said. His concern at this point in his career, at least, was always the concern of the soldiers that worked for him, he said. He said Mr. Bally was a kind of man who never complained, did not seek notoriety. His most recent was Germany, Veruta said. He owned a home with his wife in Hawaii. He was informed by Mr. Bally was a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles and freshwater fishing. A favorite fishing spot of his was Pinto Lake in Watsonville, his uncle said. Veruta said it was unclear if his nephew was the same unnamed soldier described in a New York Times article as being killed in a brazen raid by the Taliban in southern Afghanistan. Mr. Bally's mother and wife are traveling to Dover Air Force Base to escort his body back to the county. The family believes Mr. Bally will be flown to Monterey Regional Airport, and they have begun the plans for a hero's welcome. Veruta said they hope his son, his nephew, can be buried at the Presidio of Monterey Cemetery. The Army had said in May in an article in the Herald that the cemetery was filled up with 389 people buried there, but Veruta said they were holding out hope something could be worked out. This is an update. The Defense Department has confirmed the death of Edward Bally as the result of wounds from small arms fire when he was attacked by insurgents on January 20, 2014. The department said Bally was killed in the Kandahar province of Afghanistan. Also, Presidio of Monterey spokesman Dan Carpenter said the cemetery on its property was filled and unable to take Bally or any other soldiers. And this is a further update from the Monterey Herald. The Salinas native killed in combat in Afghanistan will be buried in Hawaii. The family members decided Edward Bally, a chief warrant officer on his fifth tour of duty, should be where he planned to retire and where his wife lives. Early plans were to bury him in Monterey County and to have a large hero's welcome. Instead, the family is planning a local memorial, which was held on March 1st. That's what Edward saw on the horizon, said his uncle Tony Veruta of retirement in Aloha State. Bally died when a suicide bomber blew up a minivan outside of his base in Kandahar province. The Taliban took responsibility for the attack, the Times said. Bally was buried with full honors at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific in Honolulu. A regional memorial in Germany is planned to see where Bally was most recently stationed. Immediate family members plan to attend. The show is dedicated to Chief Warrant Officer Bally and to all the brave men and women out there who have served, who are serving, and who will serve, whether they are in the armed forces or police.
In the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. I stand for my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand for.
Download that song for free at toddallenherndon.com or catch it up on YouTube. And I am honored. I am absolutely overjoyed that I have a special person who deigned to come onto my show today. Good afternoon, Cool Mike. You're back.
Good afternoon. Well, good afternoon, Annie. And I'm going to have to leave you in about a half hour or so. But yes, we have, for some people who know real quickly, the city of Grand Rapids is having an income tax on May 6th, but they missed the filing deadline, and they said that the law does not apply to them, so we are suing. I'll post the article in the chat room, but that's that. And there's an emergency meeting being set for, I'm not sure what time, but the board of canvassers or board of what. There's so many boards you don't even know. But anyway, I will be attending that at 3 o'clock. So, but while I have my commitment to saving the world, I have a commitment to you. So I'm joining you for as long as I can, Annie. And thank you so much, for those who don't know, having me as a co-host is sometimes a pain in the ass because I always have saving of the city to do. So there's an old saying, Annie, you can't fight City Hall. Well, you can't beat City Hall. I guess we'll find out.
Okay. Well, we've got a great guest on the line here. I want to welcome back my teeth just went in backwards, Mikkel Claire Nissan. He's got a great book out, Manipulism and the Weapon of Guilt, Collectivism Exposed. Now, try saying that three times fast, and you can't do it. Good afternoon, Mikkel.
How are you doing, Annie? Thanks for inviting me back.
Oh, it is our pleasure. And I got to tell you that just before we went on the air live, Anna in the chat room said she's ordering the book. She read the first three chapters you put up, and she loved it. And I saw a couple of people put up on my Facebook page. They messaged me saying that they are purchasing the book. So far, I got a couple of sales for you already.
Yeah, I'm not so much the I'm not so much for this, for the money part. You know, purchasing the book is cool. I mean, I hope we get to some, you know, eventually I could work with this full time. You know, it doesn't pay, and it takes quite a lot before you can actually get anywhere. All I really care about is actually exposing the truth and trying to help America fight something I already, you know, for something that I already lost. So, you know, I mean, I sincerely hope that my work can make a difference for Americans, and so, you know, at least you can live in liberty, something I don't really have. So,
yeah. I got to let people know that you are calling in from Denmark, and you live under collectivism or socialism, and you've lived under it all your life. And a while back, Oprah Winfrey went to Denmark, and she declared it the happiest people in the world. Let me see. I'm trying to find the article. I'm looking for an article, but I can't seem to find it. There was your own government said that we are the happiest people in the world, and your entire life you believe that. What made you change your mind?
Well, you guys did. Americans did. I mean, I went around the world, and just like anyone else who comes from a society like this, I was coerced. I was brainwashed. And if one can say, well, Americans de-brainwashed me. And, I mean, there's, you know, it's hard to explain because it didn't just come over at night, or it wasn't just a thing that just happened. It took, you know, a long time, and it all had something to do with emotions, which was the fact that I slowly, you know, observed and while creating self-esteem. You know, the what people have to understand, and it sounds pretty freaky when I say this, but socialism is a sect. And, you know, it's quite controversial, but you really have to understand how a sect works until before you can start, you know, freeing yourself from it. A sect is extremely powerful, and I mean, there should be no one out there that, you know, that misinterprets or you know, thinks in any way that narcissism is a joke. You can sit there right in front of someone who is a narcissist and not know it unless you have the psychological tools to fight it and understand it perfectly. So, you know, these kind of things have to be studied and studied carefully. It's the only way that there is to fight this. I mean, so many people, you know, get back to me and they're like, the book was about socialism, and I as recently as yesterday, I spoke to a good friend who ended up in a short debate with me, and was quite left wing, considering it, you know, American. So he was a Democrat kind of, or a greenie, and now he's turned libertarian, and he did so because of my work, because he suddenly found out that, you know, he was coerced. This guy actually lives in France, so he has the option of having the things that I teach right in front of him. I mean, we spoke for 3 hours yesterday, and, you know, we are completely on the same wavelength now. So, you know, it's become more of a personal self, you know, what do you call it, self, you know, help for people to understand what's going on around them. So it's not just, you know, ideology anymore. It is also about understanding what it's all about, you know, that politics are not anymore about politics, but rather about how much esteem we have. But I think I should let you have a word
So. No, that's all right. Because when I was doing my research last night, I came across an article in a periodical called The Future of the Welfare State. And this chapter was The Daily Life in the Danish Welfare State. Now, believe it or not, this was written in 1982 by David Gries. And he was explaining the decline, starting with the 1900s, with the Provident State, where, you know, what we call the welfare state. And he outlined the UN Convention on Human Rights and how socialism began to take over your government. And I'm looking at everything that he wrote in 1982, and I'm seeing that happen here in 2014 in the United States.
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned so, because the funny thing about this is that in Chapter 7, and I hope at some point, if you haven't, that you read Chapter 7, because these are the chapters you weren't given. I know for a fact that you read the old book, which was the first six chapters. You read it twice. I know.
I've got something like about 100 little post-it notes here with little notes on there, and I've got the printed out in front of me right in my fat little hand. And Chapter 7 is the land of infinite excuses.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the funny thing about this is that in this part of the book, I for the first time in the book actually used statistics to try to explain how powerful narcissism is. And if you follow in the middle of the chapter, you would see that I am stating how Denmark. I'm comparing Denmark, Great Britain, and American suicide rates. And the curious thing about these things is that if you take the average rate of Denmark per 100,000 over the last 50 years, you would see that the average suicide rate has been 20.8. The curious thing is that the suicide rate in the United Kingdom has only been 8.5, and the American has only been, 11.1. But the Danish one, the happiest people in the world, funny, right, has been 20.8. And the curious thing again is that the highest suicide rate ever in Denmark, 32 in 1980, and the highest suicide rate ever in America the highest was 12.7. And the highest suicide rate in the United Kingdom was 10.7. And I am trying in this chapter to explain that the curious thing about it is that people today kind of look at it and they say, oh, okay, the suicide rates are the same. But the curious thing about it is that, okay, so the suicide rates in America have been the same for the past 50 years. But suddenly, the American, antidepressant medication has shut up excessively. But the suicide rate is still stable. And so I've been trying to explain that this medication is basically proof that, you know, had this medication not existed like it did in Denmark, when we reached a suicide rate of 32, well, then you would see the American suicide rate go up. But it kind of shades or obscures the fact that you guys are in trouble and that narcissism is taking over your country. A lot of people misinterpret socialism opposed to democratic socialism, which is what you're facing. You're not facing socialism unless Obama is sick enough to do a fascist takeover completely. I just don't think he can do it, because fortunately, you people still have guns. So it's not going to be just for him to do something like that. It was quite different in Europe. But in democratic socialism, we have to understand that what is necessary to create democratic socialism is for the left-wingers to empower the absolute lowest people in society, the people at the absolute lowest parts of society, because they will now empower themselves through the vote to basically create a group of people, and eventually they become stronger and stronger and stronger. That's why he's giving away the phone right now. He wants people to be involved, basically purchasing people, bribing them into voting for him so he can empower people, on the left. That is how it works. It is not like the traditional socialism. So it's important to understand how this organism is slowly formed and how it will coerce everything that is near it. And it starts in the bottom because, of course, anyone who's at the bottom of society needs help more than the middle class and so forth. You know what I mean?
We got a question in the chat room. Anna in the chat room wants to know why you use the word manipulism. Are you describing manipulation? Is it because you consider it an ideology?
No. Manipulism is a social psychological theory, which I created in order to explain not only socialism, anything like that. Manipulism is a social psychological theory which can be applied to many, many, many different things, but it's always to do with narcissism, or generally severe narcissism. The social psychological theory sounds as follows: to lower self-esteem, consequently generating feelings of inferiority and dependency. This always follows. Dependency always follows on inferiority. That is why it is so important for everyone, for the lower class to use coercion and denigration in order to lower the self-esteem. It goes through the school system and everything in America, and slowly the American population is supposed to get lower and lower self-esteem. If you come to Europe, you would see it firsthand. The Europeans have a lot lower esteem than Americans, and so they're very easy to control. But let me start over. To lower self-esteem, consequently generating feelings of inferiority and dependency, subjectively destroying independence, to thereby facilitate complete intellectual control with fictive contentment. I can apply this theory to domestic violence. In a case like domestic violence, the husband would denigrate the wife. He would either be physical and actually beat his wife, or he would be verbally regarding. It doesn't matter which way they're doing or if they're doing both. It's still the denigration part. And what happens, and this is how a sect works too. You denigrate a person, and eventually they're going to get an inferiority complex. And you must have seen on TV that, someone's been, had eventually they have enough. And they call the police up, and the police come there. They're about to take away the husband, and then the wife will argue in favor of the husband and feel guilty for calling the police. And this is actually what's referred to as Stockholm syndrome. So basically, the theory can be applied in many ways. In the case and how I'm using it in the book, Manipulation of the Weapon of Guilt, Collectivism Exposed, just like you had it on your lips, it wasn't trouble for me too. I use the theory to explain syndromes that occur, which are very quiet, very normal. You find the syndromes all over the world. In Scandinavia, the syndrome, and they're all to do with malignant narcissism. In Scandinavia, the syndrome is called the Jantelag. If you go, you don't have to go further than Canada. Ask any Canadian if they know what the tall puppy syndrome is. And these are all syndromes that start to occur when society basically starts to suffer from inferiority complex because of leftism. I used the theory to explain what happens when you use a democratic democratic way of trying to debase society, and how this works, and how the people that suffer from severe inferiority complex, or pathological narcissism, how they debase others and how it works and how they control people that way.
You definitely did. She wrote, I have seen it here. She's calling in from Spain, so God bless her heart. The Yante Law, I have it right in front of me. The law goes, don't think you are anything special. Don't think you're as good as, don't think you are wiser than us. Don't convince yourself that you're better than us. Don't think you know more than us. Don't think you are more important than us. Don't think you are good at anything. Don't laugh at us. Don't think anyone cares about you. Don't think you can teach us anything. This sounds exactly like the section of Ayn Rand where the bosses are all trying to decide what to do with John Galt. They're telling him, you're no better than us. You know more, don't know more than us. You can't teach us anything. They don't want you to have your freedom because they're afraid of freedom, I think.
Well, basically what happens is that when a group of people start to get together, being together all feeling inferior, you start having a syndrome called collective narcissism. And these syndromes are basically built on, I should probably say it this way. For socialism to work properly, you will have to take away people's right to criticize society, its citizens, or society structure. That's the first rule, and it's also the same rule in any sect out there. You don't criticize it, they have the absolute truth, definitively. And basically, you're going to be, you know, coerced or intimidated if you try in any way to do it. Basically, you then, on top, and now we're talking socialism only, you, on top of this, take away people's right to express, oh, my God, I'm really good at, you know, writing books. These people start coercing you. They will manipulate the facts that something like self-encouragement is arrogance, even though people and most people don't really, you know, unless they study psychology, understand that it has nothing to do with arrogance. Arrogance is only if I'm saying I am better at writing books than you are. As soon as we compare ourselves to someone else, then it's a different story. But the average way that Americans work with things, where they're saying, you know what, I'm really good at this and I can do that, it is nothing to do. But you don't even have that right in a country like mine. People will. I was going to say no. I'm just going to use a bad word. Don't worry. they're going to be intimidating you right away. So, by basically, first, you can't criticize, you know, anything. Second, you are not allowed to build esteem. This is the only way you can do it, by saying I'm good at this, of course. But then what happens is that then the only thing that can give you esteem is then for other people to affirm affirm you, what do you call it in English? I'm losing that word, one single word. They're tolerating you, they're et cetera. Can you help me for a second?
I'm trying to think of what I was getting from what I was reading is they felt a power in bullying and belittling someone else, so they feel a higher esteem for themselves. It's almost like
a higher esteem. It's a higher self regard, but it's only an arousement. You know, people that suffer from narcissism don't get esteem. They get aroused. It's two different things, because esteem and you know is a different topic. But the main point is that what I was trying to get onto is that, so basically, first, you can't criticize, then you are being, you're being denied your right to express confidence. And then what happens is that when you then get inferiority complex, a very simple tendency of narcissism will occur quite quickly, which is, the need to be adulterated. You know, we also refer to it in psychology as requires excessive admiration. So basically, you know, like looking at a child that walks up to daddy or mommy and says, "Isn't this a great drawing?" It's quite common, and I'm actually writing my second book now, where I'm trying to work with trying to explain how children work. Basically, to explain that children are not different than socialists. Their mindset has a, you know, a socialist ego is the ego of a 6-year old. It sounds quite harsh, but I'm sorry to tell you, but that is. But basically.
Anyone with children know that children learn fast how to wrap you around their finger. So that's why you're saying
for sure.
A 6-year-old. So what they're doing is they're wrapping you around their finger as an adult, and they're using that child mentality, and they're playing on your emotions.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But what's curious about this is that the whole game is perfect, because what happens is when you need to be adulterated, when you need this excessive need for affirmation, they will affirm. You know, they will adulterate you. They will give you compliments constantly. And in other words, by taking away your right to expressing confidence, they're deciding your emotional level. Or in other words, your esteem. So society starts controlling your level of esteem. Does it all make sense now?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, you have also in your book, right next to the John Day Law, you've got the Hotchkiss 7 Deadly Sins of Narcissism.
Oh yeah, she's the big one. In, you know, if anyone ever wants to learn about narcissism, Hotchkiss is very, very, very good at what she does. She's written great books, so.
Yeah, well, you talked about it in your book, how they write, you know, and this all goes back to the bullying, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure, but the reason why I use Hotchkiss is because she was basically one, started working with a syndrome that occurs when someone suffers from severe narcissism. In other words, generally what psychologists refer to as narcissistic personality disorder, which is called bad boundaries. And I mean, to understand bad boundaries, you to explain how find that there is no debate about the fact that far left wing is narcissistic personality disorder. I wanted to use this terminology, as in bad boundaries, because it's very powerful and it explains a lot of details. You know, I can use it in many places in the book in order to explain the things that occur. I should remember last time we spoke on the radio when we were on the air together. You mentioned sin. Remember that one? And
right.
you were so happy about me explaining. You know, you said you looked forward to reading the when I said, you know, you can predict a debate in the new book. I've created something where you can start, you know, understanding and predicting how a debate would be, you know, debating with a true left winger. And I don't know if you got to that part, but it is, you can find it on page, I think it's page 82. Where you can, we debated the three factors, but mine has four. It's a little bit different, but it could be quite similar.
I have my little sticker on it, and the sticker says Cain, as in Herman Cain, and sin. That's exactly what I wrote there. And if anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, Herman Cain, when he had his radio show out of Atlanta, one day, I'd never heard him before. This is the first time I ever heard of him. And he was explaining how a progressive liberal will go into a debate with a conservative, and how you know you are winning the debate. You know you're winning the debate when they first do S, they switch the subject. And when that doesn't work, the next thing they do is the letter I, they ignore the facts. And when that finally fails, the last thing they do is N, the letter N, name call. So you have SIN, S-I-N. Switch the subject, ignore the fact, name call. And, Raquel, you did that, and you added a fourth one, and I just lost the page. And the fourth one?
No, I really think that, I mean, it kind of woke me up, but I wasn't going to, I think this guy was, he's definitely onto something, because, I mean, I don't think that you find two people on working, you know, on these things that are as close as you know, just by mistake. I mean, you know, mine is a bit different, but it was about explaining so people could understand what goes on within a person that you debate with. And in the end, in part four of this one, I am actually talking about bad boundaries. And what bad boundaries are is often, you know, that a person suffering from narcissistic personality disorder cannot distinct from self and other. Anyone that are around them are supposed to be around them on their terms. And if you don't think within that, the bubble they're in, and actually what we're talking about right now is what psychologists refer to as the sect. A lot of people think a sect is a bunch of people, etc., but a sect is actually a sphere that the narcissist creates around themselves. And the narcissist will invite people within this sphere and you know, basically use them, coerce them as long as they can, and until, you know, they will be there until they're either, you know, objecting to certain ways that the narcissist doesn't like, etc. And it's, you know, I think the last part of this one, a lot of people that are sitting out there listening would definitely recognize the end of a debate. But I've gone pretty far with this one to explain exactly what's going on. But you know what? I would like to read this, to be fair. Can I read this?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. And you know, there are certain things before this, so there's three little paragraphs before this one. But anyway, their egocentric egos are exposed and feeling cornered, this being the resultant narcissistic injury. This is something that happens because of bad boundaries. Okay. Or clear signs of bad boundaries, entitlement. Okay. Creating a pathological delusion that you, the perpetrator, are an awkward or difficult person. Hence, the collectivist now generally leaving the premises, usually mounted by condemnations, in some way implementing the weapon of guilt, and in the process generally applying anger and attitude, including additional body language, aggression, and name-calling. They will likely never talk to you again. However, the victor of the debate, all you can do is sit back and wait for the storm. Setting people up against one another is the absolute area of, or their absolute area of expertise. They will never back down. This last part of what I just read is actually quite normal, and you will remember this from school. To anyone who's a female that understands how females work with narcissism in school, remember how, you know, you see these in movies often, etc., how the cheerleader girls are really, really evil to each other, and they will what do you call it when you do around each other and make up things, etc. This is very, very severe narcissism. And one has to understand, we all, some psychologists will disagree, but I believe it's true that we are all born as narcissists. We're born with what we refer to in psychology as bad boundaries. The child does not have any, you know, any distinction between self and mom. And that is normal for the first year and a half, so, about 2 years. And this is called not bad boundaries, because this is normal. But what occurs in an adult is the exact same thing, except now they're 20 or 25, etc. But it's the same thing. They cannot distinct between themselves or someone else. Okay? And if you look at children, and the reason why I'm always using these examples is because people love it. They're quite laughable. You know, it's like, you know, when you're among children, you will see them say, okay, oh, that cake is a little bigger than that one, and I'm being cheated. You know what I mean? It's very simple socialist think, right? So, you know, when we sit there and eat the cake, this is exactly how being in it is to live in my country, because they're all like that, and they're adults, and I don't care if they're 80 or 25, but they all think like that, you know? Then you go into what we refer to in psychology as arrogance. Arrogance involves a phenomenon called magical thinking, which is illusion. And in this illusion, a person will make up an idea that they know something which they have no whatsoever inside knowledge about. This is called magical thinking. I'll give you an example. I think we spoke about it last time, how a girl in my country once just started popping out in a debate with me and saying, all Americans are stupid. And I was like, well, you know, how can you know all Americans are stupid? You just, you know, you've never been to America. I mean, come on. You can't have an opinion about people you've never met. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. So it, you know, these are the kind of things, or they make up stories in their head in order to fight off any contradiction of their opinion. And you know, that's why you meet the prediction, et cetera, contempt, prejudice, is quite normal, and there are simple signs of low self-esteem. I think I should let you talk a little.
No, the last time we talked, I think I told you about my experience when I was flying to Denmark, and this was, 1978 or 79, and I ended up sitting next to a gentleman from Denmark. And I was asking him how he liked, you know, his visit to the United States. And he started looking down his nose to me, and he goes, it's a filthy, corrupt place. And I said, excuse me? I said, where were you? He goes, oh, I was at the Pierre Hotel in Manhattan. And I said, well, that's a very nice hotel. That's a 5-star hotel. And I said, did you go out and do any touring, or did you, you know, go around the streets? Because they got a lot of beautiful shops, very expensive, but very nice. He goes, no, I stayed in my hotel room the whole entire time. And I said, oh, you didn't go to anything else? He goes, no. And he goes, everything is just cement buildings and sidewalks and filth and crime. And I said, then you haven't seen New York State. I said, you don't know about the rolling mountains and the hills and the farms and the vineyards and so much beauty and history. And he goes, no, it's all just city streets. And I said, New York State, very large state. It's larger than your country of Denmark. I said, there are a lot of farmlands and historic sites and hiking trails, and we have a Renaissance festival. And he goes, that's all lies. That's all lies. You're just making it up. And he just started cursing me out. I'm here. And let's see, 78, I'm 20 years old. Here I am, a young woman, and he's cursing me out. And I looked at him, and I said, you know, you're a crazy Dane. And all of a sudden, he just shut up. He says, I'm not talking to you anymore. I said, oh, good, I'll enjoy the peace and quiet. But this,
well, I think your example is the perfect, it's the perfect example of brainwashing. I mean, because, but again, I think it's so important to go back and understand that brainwashing, there is no such thing as just brainwashing. It has to do with severe inferiority complex. It does not occur without. You cannot brainwash someone who has high self-esteem. Simply impossible. That is at least my opinion, and I would like someone to argue against it. You know, I don't mind being wrong, but we're all in pursuit of trying to find the truth. What you tried there is just, I mean, it's so common, and some of the stories that I use in my book and some of the things that I try, you know, living in this country, I should say that I barely even hang out with Danish people anymore. I do pick out a few friends that, you know, that kind of understand what I'm, you know, working with, but there are very, very few. It's a pity, and I think the example with this guy, you know, I'm actually using in the next book that I'm writing an example of how Danish people, they'll go on a holiday basically just like this guy for one single reason. They'll go out there and be, you know, they'll find every single little thing about another country that they can go home and pick on, you know, so they can feel better about themselves, so they can make up an illusion about how much better Denmark is. You know, it's awful to have these, you know, you basically put people in a situation where they feel really, really bad. And so everyone has a need to make up, you know, an illusion to make it better. I mean, there are so many ways, and psychology provides extremely powerful tools in order to explain these things. I mean, an example, you know, I work with narcissism, and I'm not a specialist in what I'm about to explain, but you know, we have what we refer to as more than one personality, people that suffer from these kind of disorders. And it's the same kind of thing that occurs, you know, if someone feels bad and something happens to them in childhood or through childhood, which is the way that, you know, socialism works, the brainwashing-wise, debasing everyone and so creating inferiority complex. You know, these things, you know, they're your ego will invent certain things. Most cases, it's been proven that people that create you know, multiple personalities have been abused. And so, you know, they create a personality that will basically pop out, you know, suddenly occur as soon as someone is getting too close to the truth, or, you know. So these are all basically shielding for truth. And just like you explained there, this guy goes to America. He feels really bad about Denmark, but he doesn't want this illusion to down. I've been in a forum in a group called Americans in Denmark for the past couple of weeks, and a lot of these people kind of do the same thing. They're you know, living here, and they kind of want to continue living the illusion. So they're kind of prejudiced, and you feel it, the contempt, quite quickly, and that I'm not welcome there. I did catch a couple of people, though, so it doesn't matter anyway. But, I mean, it's all about stopping anyone from enabling the truth to get out, you know? I mean, what I teach is so simple. I mean, a child can understand these things, but so many people, they read 3 lines in the book, and they've decided already how the whole book is, and it's exactly how this whole, you know, mind game works. It is all about creating people that don't want to seek truth.
Yeah, I did find an article written last year, April, from the New York Times, and I understand it stirred up a little bit of a firestorm back at your homeland. It was written saying the Danes rethink a welfare state ample to a fault. Now, it was talking about this 36-year-old woman, Karina, who was a permanent welfare. You know, she got on since she was 16. At the time this was written, she was 36. And supposedly, it created a whole big rethink on maybe there's too much of the nanny state. Is that what's going on?
Nah, it didn't. I'm really sorry to tell you, it really didn't. It really didn't. The debate was there, but, you know, they didn't move an inch because of it. I don't know any. Did you find this outside? Because the example is actually used in my book, too.
Which example are you talking about?
The Karina debate.
Oh, all right. Oh,
I can read it. You know what? Let me read this aloud, because it really makes it makes sense to let the audience out there understand what we're talking about.
Oh, I have to apologize. I didn't put the two of them together. I thought this was someone different. It's the same person. Okay. My bad.
Oh, yeah. No. This, what you just referred to, is called the Karina debate. Let me read this paragraph for you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Debates began in 2011 around a politician's living example of a poor person in Denmark with the pseudonym, whatever, called poor Karina.
Oh, pseudonym.
Sorry?
It's pseudonym.
Pseudonym. Okay. Well, you know, I do speak English as a second language, so it's not always easy to remember every word. It's pseudonym. Okay. Okay. So in Denmark, with the pseudonym, poor Karina. Her story optimizes learned helplessness. Optimizes learned helplessness, excessive entitlement, being the story of a 36-year-old mother of two on welfare since she was 16 years old. Karina had received cash and benefits, example given, free daycare, education, medicine, reaching in the proximity, and now listen, proximity of $500,000. Karina's personal claim was that she was so poor that she could not afford a cinema ticket for her child on her monthly government benefit of around $3,000 after tax. However, when the debating politicians entered her decent apartment, it was discovered that she had an upstanding living arrangement with nice furniture and a flat-screen TV, not to mention that she was able to maintain a 500 kroner, which is $100, per month smoking habit. Her case is just one amongst tens of thousands. Let's not forget the abundance of substance addicts and alcoholics whose addiction is in fact sponsored by the taxpayer, again, government bribery, money for misery, with absolutely no intent of to solve the actual true origin of the matter. The reason Karina gave for not being being unable to afford a cinema ticket was that she had just bought a brand new sofa for $900.
I need a new sofa. You know, we've got a great
exactly. I mean, the example is perfect because the example, this illusion, I am poor and I don't have enough money. You know what, if someone has $900 left over, and you know what, I was actually going to correct you in the start of the show, because one of the best coercion techniques out there is the fact that they are having people calling it welfare society. It is not welfare society. It is democratic socialism. A welfare society works the way that your society works. A little less than today, but it's about helping people so they don't starve, okay? But that's it. What we live in has nothing to do with helping the absolute weakest so they don't die on the streets. This society is nurturing. It is, you know, it is basically nannying everyone on levels that are crazy. Because the $3,000 that I just mentioned a minute ago that she gets after taxes is better than the average person who works in a factory in this country. And so, why would you want to work in a factory when you can get welfare worth even more money than someone who works?
Well, that's what's starting to happen here, unfortunately, and that's the trend we have to stop. And what I have to do is I got to remember to email you a copy of this article I pulled up from 1982, the one by David Gress, because it might help you in your next book and to see the history of how you ended up in the state that your country is in. And he predicted everything that is happening now and what is starting to happen here, everything.
Yeah, the only thing is that this started a lot earlier.
Oh, yeah, he covers that too. Going back to the feudal
system. Okay, as long as these people did that, and one thing they have to understand, what Americans have to understand, and why it's been so easy for you know creating democratic socialism and generally very far left wing all over Europe, it is because that all Europeans were taxed in numerous different ways for the past 2,000 years. But Americans came here, you had your tea party, and it was just enough, you know? So the whole thing about taxation has been really hard to implement in America, even though you are being taken over now and it's going downhill. I mean, I think that it's important to point out in this show that what is going on right now is basically what I would pinpoint to what is going on in the 30s in Europe, right before Hitler took over. What we have to understand that the way that democratic socialism works best is, of course, because of dependency. And when you look at how things occur through time, you would see that, of course, we started moving left in a country like mine. The social democrats became pretty big and got their best election in 1925. And, you know, slowly they were there, and the war came and everything. And the war basically created ruin. It put everything in Europe into ruins after the war was over. Everyone was dependent. And so it was really, really easy to sell leftism because everyone needed something. And the government came and said, you know what, we were going to help you, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And the fact that then they started and this technique, this phenomenon has been out there for a long time, the fact that they've brainwashed the world into believing that Hitler was a right-winger, which he was, except he was a right-winger on the left wing, which is the joke. But the main point is that Hitler was never a right-winger. He wasn't an individualist. When everyone talks about it, and the problem with these things is that, you know, today we look at right versus left wing, and we should rather look at collectivism versus individualism. Because the farther we go right, the more individual we become, the more libertarian, you know, and eventually reaching anarchy. And there is no such thing as what they're trying to promote out there. I read a book a little while back called Authoritarian Right Wing, and it has nothing to do with right wing, because the farther right wing we get, the less authoritarian you are, the more freedom you get. I mean, I usually say to people, you know what, I am standing right here, and anything left of me is radicalism, in my opinion, because I stand here in freedom, and any view off that freedom is radicalism. So forget all that. We need to start moving in different directions and argue with new ways, because we are all coerced by their techniques. Their techniques, their right, their left, and there is no such thing. There is freedom or no freedom. You know, we need to start working different ways. Does it make sense?
Oh, absolutely makes sense, because I'm thinking about some of the things that have happened politically here in the United States, and for those that stand on the left, you find them doing the name-calling, the bullying, the changing of words, the meaning of words. Also now, it doesn't mean what we always believed it to mean. You know, liberal at one point was someone very close to a libertarian, but they co-opt mm-hmm. the work. Now they take it and they're trying to say a right wing of a left movement. But that's an oxymoron. You can't possibly have
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah, I so agree. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
We have,
it has nothing to do with reality.
We have this socialistic system of school teaching called Common Core that we are battling in all 50 states. And what was their response to that? Well, we'll take it back, we'll change the name of it, and give it back to them again. So simply changing the name and trying to feed it to us over and over and over again until we finally buy into the system. And again, and this is the things that we see, and unfortunately we're independent enough, we're individual enough to see what they're doing, to see behind the curtain and see the wizard.
And that's my point. A lot of people out there and it's not like we're any different, because I understand where people are coming from, but you cannot debate with the left winger. Forget it. Don't worry about it. It's a waste of time. The only way that you can do any difference is by making them find out they're wrong themselves. Because the first rule of narcissism is the inability to take criticism. It's pretty simple. So you're never going to get anywhere with these people. The only way for people to start moving in America now is to reach audiences with something like my work, with normal work about narcissism, educating people about narcissism, et cetera, so they can start visualizing the problem. When the problem is that a lot of Americans, like anywhere else in the world, they travel. They go to Denmark, of course. Hey, this country is so happy. Let's go see it. And of course, what do you think Danes are going to do? They come over here, and Danes, you know, they want to sell the story about how happy it is. So of course they're happy. Of course they're smiling. Until you ask them funny questions or don't, you know, adulterate them about how tell them how good Denmark is and how lovely everything is. I mean, if you ever come here again, or anyone who's been to Denmark, these things are so obvious. A Dane will always, you know, instantly they meet you, they will ask you, what do you think about Denmark? What do you think about Denmark? They need to be affirmed. They need to be told that what you see, they, you know, is so lovely. But if you don't tell them what they want to hear, they're going to be gone in a second. They're going to dislike you, you know. And it's very unfortunate that if Americans don't start to understand the ideals of narcissism, more and more people, the young people, will come over here and think that it's just the behavior they meet in Europe is just normal. Culture, and it's not. It is not. I believe that about 35% of Europeans suffer from narcissistic personality disorder, and in a country like mine, the rates are probably. I mean, I've written in my book that they are as high, probably as high as 70%. And we're talking about narcissistic personality disorder, which is psychopathic narcissism. Okay, so we're, you know, and as we spoke about, I think we spoke about this last time at least, that, you know, several famous psychologists out there have already diagnosed your president, Obama, with severe narcissism, and he is likely a psychopathic narcissist.
Duh.
Yeah, but it's pretty unfortunate because if this man, I mean, just like the people, you know, and what you're standing up against right now, and I don't even watch TV, but thinking about what's going on between Russia right now and America, it's all about who has the biggest thing between his legs right now between these two guys, because they have the same syndrome. They want to be feared, you know. They want to be affirmed. They want to be the biggest guy. They want to be, you know, told to their best. You know, that's what narcissists are like, and it's a freaking dangerous game when you have two people like that up against each other. So,
well, I want to play a clip for you. This was on Fox News. Stu Varney, who was an Englishman, now he's an American, and Star Parker, who ran for Congress, and they're talking about President Obama, and everything she ticks off is everything that you wrote about in the book. Let me play this clip. It's only about 2.5 minutes long. And here we go.
Touch it with the
I would not touch it.
We've been posing this question to our big name guests all week. Has President Obama fundamentally changed America? Star Parker joins us now. She says yes to that question. Star, you got four examples of the way you think that the president has changed America. I'm going to go through them with you. First off, you say he's taken away free speech. Go.
Well, he's done more than take away free speech. He's actually attacked the entire First Amendment. It's not just about freedom of speech. He's attacked the press. He's gone after religious liberties. In fact, he has over 300 people in court right now because of Obamacare on just the religious liberty question.
Number two, you say there is less trust in government now. Well, come on, Star. There's always been some skepticism about government in America.
There has been, and that's wonderful. That's why we have a three-part government, because man is deceitful above all and desperately wicked. But what Barack Obama has done is gone after the Second Amendment to disarm the American people. That's frightening.
Is that a biblical quote? Desperately?
What,
yes. Is it?
King Solomon, yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I couldn't quite place it.
The heart of man is deceitful above all and desperately wicked. Who could know it?
That was
That's
good.
Why we want a three-part government.
Big government has taken power away from the states. You're saying that? You're saying that's one of the ways that we've fundamentally changed America? Explain.
Well, what he's done is pitted the states against the federal government, because what has happened is the Republicans have elected wonderful governors and legislators who are doing amazing things in the different states, but Barack Obama's administration is saying, no, you're playing it our way or you're not playing at all. And one example is what's happening with Bobby Jindal down in Louisiana, where they're in court over school choice issues.
Last one, class warfare. Now, I was born and raised in England. We invented class warfare. We know a lot about it, let me tell you. You explain it in the American context, please.
Well, what has made America great is we have risk takers, that your fate is not necessarily your destiny. And what Barack Obama has done is, in the biggest affront, if you will, is this idea of redistribution, pitting now the poor against the wealthy, building out envy. And when you think about this whole notion of redistribution, it is so inconsistent with the founding of this particular country that we're stagnated in growth. And this hurts poor people more than anyone else.
Yeah, you give me 5-6% growth and I'll give you a real fundamental change in direction from where we are now. Hey, Star Parker, that was a very well-organized segment. Thank you very much indeed. You got
Now, this is everything you wrote about in your book, the envy, the class warfare. This is exactly what our president is doing. And you have...
The inability to criticize, too, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, we also got another caller in on the line. Thomas, good afternoon. Thomas, are you with us? Okay, I think Thomas fell asleep. Well, hopefully he'll come back in again. But... it is true. He's fundamentally changing our nation and trying to make it look like Europe. But what gets me really, really annoyed is that our own media is complicit in this whole thing. It's as if they're partners in crime. And whenever the United States does something, they always run over to these polls in Europe and say, oh, what is your opinion of America? As if we're supposed to react based upon your opinion of us rather than what is our natural nature.
Yeah, there's only one thing to say, that stay away. America is, it's not perfect. There's no way that America is a perfect country. There are a lot of trouble in America. There are a lot of problems in America, but I still believe it's the greatest nation on earth. And what this man is destroying, and, you know, I mean, I can't seem to grasp the fact that, you know, so many people, you know, they might flee their countries, etc. They come to America, and then they start over wanting the same thing again, rather than understanding what it is to live in freedom. And it's something, and it took me a long time, so I can understand why people think the way they do. But, I mean, you know, I actually mentioned, you know, through a couple of debates out there, that I wish that eventually the world will come up with a system where people can actually exchange passports. Because you know what? Take your liberals and then go to Europe. And then all of us here in Europe that really doesn't like these totalitarian ways, let's go to America. And then they can enjoy our socialism over here and we can enjoy our freedom in America. You know, it would be so much better if people had the option of living the life that they wanted. Truly, I mean, the reason why I seriously started sitting down writing what I did was because I felt there was one single thing, and this is where I can shed a tear, and I'm not being, what do you call it, melodramatic or anything like that. This is something I really feel for. You know, if Americans lose their pride and their esteem, the world has lost to leftism, and it's just how it is.
Wow. And that is from someone who's not an American and wishes he was. And I completely agree. What makes us exceptional is our individualism and our independence. And the more we dependent upon the government handout and the government largesse, the more we lose that. And then you have people that would rather stay at home. I recently played a clip from a woman out in California, and she went up on YouTube bragging about how she doesn't work, she doesn't have to, because she has all this money coming in from the government, money for her home.
I think I've seen that African-American woman.
Right. And it's an attractive...
Yeah, I've seen clips. She's nasty.
Her mind is nasty, yeah. And the way
For sure. Oh, this is nothing to do with black or white or anything. This is not color. She is deeply deprived. And it's a pity to see someone like that who sits there and says, if you don't vote for Obama, you're a racist. I mean, come on. What is that for an argument? It's just as lame as the argument that, you know, I want you to leave me alone. I want the right to own a gun so I can protect my home. It does not mean I'm going to go around shooting people. It just means I want to protect my four walls within my home so no one can hurt me. And I want your government to leave me alone. I want to be independent, and that's all I'm asking you. And a leftist will come up with the solution that now you must be a fascist. Then, I mean, come on. The things that we have to put up with from these people, and no one speaks out, or at least too few speaks out in regards to this. And that is why I truly believe that psychology is the solution. Psychology is the solution to go in, and the more people that understand that they're not looking at a person who is normal. We're looking at someone who is driven by serious, serious, serious narcissism. And they're not. You know, they're driven by a bad, bad disorder. I can't sit here and diagnose that woman just from watching a video. But, you know, it is not anymore about, you know, opinions or I have this. It has all become about what I need for myself. A lot of people, when they debate with me, they're saying that, you know, democratic socialism is all this and that, and it's free, and you have democracy. And I always ask this one question to them: do you think democratic socialism in any way would work was it not for personal gain? And I still haven't had anyone who could argue against that question, you know. So, and I think it's important to have the facts right out there, but it takes a long time, also because we are constantly coerced, and that's why I'm arguing that people should simply stay away from these people, because they're powerful. A lot of people they're not aware how powerful it is on us. It is important to understand that every time we feel guilt, try to analyze it. Analyze if we should feel guilty. You know what? If I kicked someone, yes, feel guilty, because I shouldn't. But I told you that I wanted freedom, and now someone is telling me off for it, and I feel guilty. That is not a good guilty. And we need to start working with psychology in order to fight these people with the same tools that they use against us. They use prejudice. They use projection. All these kind of psychological tools, intimidation, coercion, etc. And in order to put words on these things, we can win the war. If this is not something that becomes normal, we are going to lose because it's a mental battle.
That it is. Now, your book, Manipulism, they can get it up on your website, which is manipulism.com. It's just HTTP :// no www, just manipulism.com. And I recommend everyone to read it. It really will open up your eyes, and you'll start looking around and seeing, hey, this is happening here, this is happening here. Whoa, we have to put the brakes on it. Let me see if I can get Thomas back in again. Thomas, are you with us?
Yes, Annie. I was just, when I was listening to your show, I was watching 300, kind of getting fired up times two. Anyway, I just wanted to compliment the guest on, you know, the knowledge that he gave to us today, and I just know that I appreciate, you know, just his dedication to freedom. And it's a great show, as usual. So.
Why, thank you, Mike.
You're right.
Thank you, Thomas. Wasn't it Thomas?
Yeah, it was Thomas. Yeah. Thomas himself had a show here, The Exceptional Conservative. No, wait. No, that's Ken. Ken's the Exceptional Conservative. But Thomas had to show up here also. I don't know if he's still up there. Thomas, if you're in the chat room, just place the link for your show for everyone to see up there. If anyone wants to call in and ask Mikhail a question, the lines are open. It's 917-889-3675. And I should mention that we are being broadcast simultaneously, not only on Blog Talk Radio, but on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston and TeaPartyCommunity.com. And anyone that's up in Facebook knows how frustrating Facebook can be. They want to go to a website that operates very similar to Facebook, but without all the BS in it and without all the limitations. Go to TeaPartyCommunity.com and tell Tim Selfie Sr. and Jr. I sent. Have you checked out that site, Mikhail? That's a good site for you, too.
I'll look into it for sure. I mean, it's important through this show. I started mentioning, you know, when we started, that this whole thing, money is not really the matter. Okay, it was important for me to give back to Americans what you gave to me, which was freedom. And I kind of tried to take this a step further because a lot of people are like, oh, okay, liberty is liberty, but people don't understand that liberty can also be liberty within. They do. Some do, but not many people think about it. Sorry, that was denigrated statement. I'll take that back. but yeah, I think it's important to take these things a bit further to practice liberty within, not letting people, you know, coerce you, decide for you, or in any way to you know, do your best to become a strong individualist, you know. You know, to stand alone is something that is really harsh. It's hard. And for someone who live like me, who lives in Denmark, who barely speaks to people around me, we are social creatures, and it's hard. And so it's a fight. It's a fight within. But is it worth it? I believe it is. I believe it is. And I mean, you know, I think more and more people out there are starting to listening, and a lot of people out there can use the tools of psychology in order to help. You know, help them understand how they're being controlled by others. And, you know, I think, you know, the type of society that we want to try to create is a society where people voluntarily want to help each other. You know what I mean? I mean, the curious thing about this whole thing is that when you look into how generous rich people in America are, of course they're bad people out there. There are bad people on all sides. I don't care where we look, they're always going to be bad people. But when you look at the generosity that you find in America, Bill Gates wants to give $80 billion to people in AIDS, HIV Foundation or so when he dies. You know, I know Mark Zuckerberg just gave, I think it was $350 million away to poor people, etc., helping, you know. So this whole, you know, envy the rich people, etc., you know, I hate it. I believe in benign envy. I believe in the fact that, you know, if you see someone who drives a Ferrari, run over there. Oh, as fast as you can, run over there and ask the guy, not because he has a Ferrari, but he must have done something well in his life in order to achieve having a Ferrari. I'm not envious of his Ferrari, but, you know, the fact that he has accomplishment, wow, walk over there, learn from it, you know? I mean, it's the whole, this is one thing that Americans really taught me, the benign envy that your country is built on, the fact that it wasn't denigrative being a worker in a factory. You had pride in being a worker in a factory. But, you know, as soon as, you know, this inferiority complex slowly takes over in society, then these kind of positions are not suddenly, they're not, you know, anything you can be proud of anymore. And suddenly, you know, the best tool, you know, when these people in government wants to control you, well, then they have you, because started, you know, and we could actually go into some of the things, well, maybe we should wait for another show for that. But there is Chapter 9 when I go into all the crazy things about how, you know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, I should get paid better. But the curious thing is about getting paid better, and I'm not talking about no minimum salary or so that the government is trying to intervene with, but I'm talking about that people want a better salary. And what happens when you look at society, mine, for an instance, when people start getting a better salary, well, then they have to let go of someone often. So less people can work there, etc. Because they can't sell the merchandise that they want to sell for the same price anymore. In other words, there's less revenue. I know it's a harsh system out there, but unfortunately, that is how the economy works. And the problem that happens is when, so now that, you know, you get a better salary, well, of course, if you get a better salary, then you go to a restaurant and it's going to be more expensive. So what's the gain? There is no gain in higher salaries. Because in the end, whole society will just be more and more expensive to live in, and the salary will have no means anyway. Because everything is just more expensive. You might get paid better, but everything's expensive too. So there is no gain whatsoever. And these are the kind of things that people don't look into, which is very, you know, I'm absolutely no good at math, but these things are logic. These things are very logical, and when you look at a society like mine, we are now looking at levels of about 70 to 80% of an average income is taxed.
Wow.
And you don't want to get there. You don't want to get there. I mean, and it's all the illusion. They're paying people a minimum wage of $24, but then everything is three times more expensive than it is in America. So what's it worth?
Unbelievable. Well, Mikhail, we're down to our last 4.5 minutes. It has been absolutely fascinating. I'm sorry my co-host couldn't stay with me for the whole show, but it was great. And there was a lot of fantastic comments up in the chat room with people that were listening in. And you know, you will be coming back. You're going to be one of our favorite.
I hope so. Can I have a last word before I go?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I want to say to people out there that, as I said before, I'm not for the money. Should you be able to find me, you know what, I accept all friend requests on Facebook. If you can find me and you friend me on Facebook, I will give you instantly my ebook for free. And I'm hoping that people understand that the ebook that I give people, the people that are listening, I know a lot of fans out there are listening to this show. And you know what, help me. And help yourselves by giving the book away. I don't care about the money. I care about the freedom of ours.
God bless you, Mikhail. God bless you and your family.
Thank you.
Oh, man, what a fantastic and awesome guest. And I'm telling you, when I meet him, we'll end up being best friends. What a fantastic guy. I do wish he travels to the United States again. And my husband and I can sit down and chat with him and shake his hand and thank him for all of his hard work. What a lot of work went into this book. And like he said, go to his website, manipulism.com, and get his book. Friend him up on Facebook, and you'll find him on his name. His name is up on the show page. Or you just send me a message on Facebook, you know, Southern Sense on Facebook, and I'll give you the contact or the link or whatever to Mikhail's site. So I want to thank everyone for joining us. We're going to be back here on Tuesday. And Tuesday, I'm trying to think of who my guest is. Oh, I believe my guest is going to be Lee Bright, who's running against Lindsey Graham. I have to double-check to see what my schedule is. Without a co-host, I'm a little lost. But I hope everyone joins us again on Tuesday and that you all have a safe, healthy, and happy weekend. And be careful out there. Until then, on behalf of Southern Sense,
if you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. We'll be right back. Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got